Good evening and welcome to Nightline Africa. We are coming to you from the English service of The Voice of America. Thanks for joining us. I'm Peter Clote in Washington, D.C. A report by the Botswana Presidential Commission of Inquiry proposes changing Seretse Khama Day to Heroes Day.
Indeed, there were others. And that's why I was suggesting that if they wanted to recognize others, instead of saying that, no, this particular day should be struck off, they could also usher in a separate day if they wanted to recognize other people as well.
A group calls on Malawian President Chakwera to dismiss the Inspector General of Police and the Minister for Home Affairs and Internal Security.
By now, the president should have fired immediately the Inspector General of Police, the Minister of Homeland Security, the Minister of Justice.
And M23 rebels say they want a meeting with former Kenyan President Uhuru Kenyatta to find a solution to the conflict in the Democratic Republic of Congo. Those stories and more coming up on Nightline Africa. In Botswana, a report by the Presidential Commission of Inquiry has proposed changing Seretse Khama Day to Heroes Day. This, the report suggests, will honor all individuals who contributed to the country's independence. The proposal follows a nationwide consultation by the Commission of Inquiry. Seretse Khama Day was established by Botswana's second president, Ketumele Masiri, to honor the founding leader and first president who led the country to independence. Other recommendations include that a former president who has served two full-year terms must not return to active politics. Reacting to the commission's proposals in part one of a conversation with VOA, former President Seretse Khama Iyankama tells me that the proposals appear to be targeting members of his family and are eroding the legacy of his father.
Indeed, that is true, that there were a number of people who were part of the independence move for our country. But like I said, the day itself was in recognition of his contribution, of him being the founding president, and also during the period that he was president and oversaw the supervision of the country's development during his time. So that was why the day itself was specially set aside in recognition of his personal contribution. Indeed, there were others. And that's why I was suggesting that if they wanted to recognize others, instead of saying that, no, this particular day should be struck off, they could also usher in a separate day if they wanted to recognize other people as well.
Well, President Khama, some people will suggest that while you were president, you served two consecutive terms. Why didn't you perhaps recognize the contribution of other people who served or who helped in the independence movement for the country to achieve that as a way of also recognizing them?
Indeed, I did. I recognized the second president, Sir Ketumele Masiri, for his contribution to the nation, and he was also one of the founding fathers of our independence. A couple of years ago, we built a teaching hospital, which is the biggest in the country in terms of medical facilities, and named it after him. During our 50th anniversary celebrations, we also recognized by giving certificates to those people who had made contributions to our country before and after independence.
Well, Mr. President, one of the recommendations is that a retired president who has served two terms in office, approximately 10 years in office, should not return to active politics. What is your reaction to this recommendation?
Indeed, it is a direct attack on me because I have left the presidency, as you're aware, after having served 10 years, and I am active in politics. And because of my activism, which he sees poses a direct threat to his re-election, because I am working with other parties. So they think, no, let's change the constitution and say that someone who has been president should not be able to be active in politics. And if he does, then he or she will lose all their retirement benefits. Well, it's interesting when they say 10 years. What if a president has been in office for 5 years? Why do they say 10 years? Why not 9 years? Why not 8 years? Why not 7 years?
Well, Mr. President, the commission also recommends that children born to Botswana and non-Botswana parents, citizens of Botswana, and children born to a single non-citizen mother in Botswana holding dual citizenship should not be permitted to occupy offices of Member of Parliament, Cabinet Minister, Vice President, and President, and should be barred from joining disciplined forces. Why do you have an issue with this? This is in the constitution of many other African countries, and if this is a recommendation, suggestions by people across the country, why shouldn't it be implemented?
That is my case. My father was a Motswana, my mother was from England, but I was the commander of the Botswana Defence Force. I was a minister, I was a vice president, I was the president. So in my opinion and the opinion of everybody, that was a progressive step. Now they want to go backwards and now target us because my brothers and others in my family have married ladies who are not citizens of Botswana and they have got children who now they are saying cannot be president, vice president, and so on and so forth. And my current brother, one of my brothers, is a member of parliament. But now it's going to be so ridiculous because you're saying he can be a member of parliament and his son cannot be a member of parliament. And even under this provision, that brother of mine, if it was something which had happened before, wouldn't have been able to be a member of parliament. So when you're going to change a constitution for a country, you're expecting that it's going to improve the situation. It's going to be progressive, not go backwards.
But Mr. President, some people are suggesting that it is only one family, perhaps, or quite a few, that will be affected and not a majority of the population. So it shouldn't be looked upon as an assault or a direct attack on your family. How do you respond to that?
That is how they try to disguise. But it is so obvious because if you go through a number of recommendations, you will see that it is so coincidental that there are so many aspects of the recommendations which affect our family.
Seretse Khama Ian Khama is a former president of Botswana and the son of the country's founding president. He spoke with me from an undisclosed location after he left his country in 2021. He and several former government officials have been charged with multiple criminal offenses in Botswana, including illegally possessing firearms. Khama denies the charges and says they are politically motivated. Join us for the concluding part of the conversation with former President Khama on Nightline Africa on Sunday. In Malawi, the Center for Democracy and Economic Development Initiatives, a civil society group, is calling on President Lazarus Chakwera to dismiss the Inspector General of Police and the Minister for Home Affairs and Internal Security. This after the recent arrest of Martha Chizuma, the head of the Anti-Corruption Bureau. The police had arrested Chizuma over a leaked audio released earlier in the year. Local media reports say the anti-corruption chief was mistreated while being transported to the police station. Civil society groups condemned the arrest, saying it appears to be an act of intimidation to undermine the fight against graft. Sylvester Namiwa is the executive director of the Center for Democracy Economic Development Initiatives. He tells me that firing the top law enforcement officials will help demonstrate President Lazarus Chakwera's commitment to the fight against corruption.
We still contend that in an event that indeed the president was not aware of the developments leading to the ACB Director General Martha Chizuma, By now, the president should have fired immediately the Inspector General of Police, the Minister of Homeland Security, the Minister of Justice, and also we could not have heard of merely suspending the Director of Public Prosecution. He could have been fired and interdicted. This is why we would like to take it with a pinch of salt that as far as we are concerned, all public officers do not work using common sense. There are set guidelines, there are set standards, there are rules and regulations. In fact, they work according to acts.
Are you saying, Namiwa, that your organization contends that the police officer who supposedly gave the order for the chief of the Anti-Corruption Bureau to be arrested might have had instructions from somebody else?
Exactly. Look here. Assuming that the president was not aware, then it tells you that we have got a serious problem, because on each one, that is a red flag in terms of security lapse. Now, it means everyone in this country is not safe, including the president himself. Secondly, if the president indeed, if it happens that he was not aware of the developments, then it tells us one thing, that we have either someone or else a group of people that are very powerful than the president himself. This is why we say, we still contend, that in a normal situation, there is no way the Inspector General of the Malawi Police could have made such a bold decision, such a serious decision, without clearing, first of all, or before getting sanctioned, or before getting a blessing from the Commander-in-Chief, who happens to be the President himself. Secondly, there's no way that the Inspector General of Police can make such a decision without clearing with the line minister, who happens to be the Minister of Homeland Security. In the same way, there's no way DPP, who is under the Minister of Justice, can make such a serious decision without clearing with his boss, the Minister of Justice. So we expected that heads should have rolled, and by now the president should have fired all these people.
But Namiwa, the president has instituted or established a commission of inquiry to look into this, an investigation to find out what really happened, if there were lapses or if there were some rogue elements who decided to arrogate powers to themselves to cause the arrest of this chief of the Anti-Corruption Bureau, Martha Chizuma.
This is a straightforward issue. This is why we are calling upon Malawians to stop entertaining mediocrity. We think it's a straightforward issue because it was handled by the police. In order for the police to move, they were directed by someone. So it was a question of calling the police inspector general just to tell the president who actually gave her the instruction to do so. We find the calling of the Commission of Inquiry misplaced, ill-timed, and an attempt just to waste taxpayers' money. And most importantly, it is just a face saver on the president, because he is the architect of the whole thing. From where we are standing, this is a straightforward issue. And going by the president's history, in the way he has handled the findings and the reports from such commissioners of inquiry, Malawians should forget. This is just buying time. Shortly, another scandal will come up and the Malawians will forget this. The issue will die natural death. No one will know the truth.
Sylvester Namiwa is the executive director of the Center for Democracy and Economic Development Initiatives. He spoke with me from the Malawian capital, Lilongwe. In the Democratic Republic of Congo, M23 rebels say they want a meeting with former Kenyan President Uhuru Kenyatta in an effort to find a solution to the conflict there. Kenyatta, who was recently appointed as mediator, seeks to resolve the conflict in DRC and has called for a ceasefire for all parties. The rebels' call came after they promised to withdraw from areas they have captured in clashes with the DRC army. It also follows a report by the United Nations that accused the rebels of killing 131 civilians in the eastern part of the country. Loris Kanyuka is the political spokesperson for the M23 rebel group. He tells me that the accusations are false and are aimed at creating hatred of the group among civilians.
We have requested to speak to the facilitator and the mediator because they are the people who decide in the lives of ourselves and the citizens of Eastern African community and Central Africa. So these are our leaders who make decisions. So that's good for us to meet them to discuss the issues that we actually want to put forward.
But what will you want the mediator to do, especially when the M23 is being accused of 131 civilians killed by members of this rebel movement in Eastern Congo, according to the United Nations?
It is appalling the way you actually confirming this information. It should be alleged. And the situation is that the investigation done by the UNESCO is actually followed by the UNESCO itself. Look on the communique released by the UNESCO on a point 5 of a fifth paragraph. It said basically they've never been on the ground. They actually conducted this investigation over 20 kilometers away from the situation where the thing is there. So basically, all I'm trying to say to you, this investigation is actually based on the false information, because they say they have witnesses that are spoken to that came to seek refuge where they are. So on that area, there is not any displaced people camp. The only camp in that area they were conducted this investigation is only the FRDC in the coalition forces camp, the RCCN camp, and the UNESCO camp itself. So basically, these allegations are fake. We have released a document explaining exactly what has happened, and we have named the victim that was actually fallen on that day. We named 8 people on the document. So one will have to look. In beginning of the situation, the DRC government claimed that there were 120 people. Then it went down to 100 people. After that, it went to 50 people. Then they decreed 3 days of mourning. But today, we are amazed that you see it's going up and up. So where are these people? Who identified these people? Where are these things happening? So you're just collecting people saying, wait, they saw people died and they've been killed or they've been doing this. But there's not actually a concrete evidence. So we ask UNESCO to come on the ground, do the investigation on the ground, but they never came. And we don't understand why people are just giving fake information to fill the problem on the area.
Loris, let's focus on the M23. Recently, the M23 said it was going to withdraw its rebels from certain areas. Have you started it? And when will you conclude this withdrawal? And what is the significance of this withdrawal?
The M23 is actually in the search of the peace. He heard the words of the leaders of the region requesting for this withdrawal. The M23 released the communique saying that he wants to have a meeting with the force commander to discuss the implementation of the said resolution. So we are anyway until we have this meeting to establish what will happen then.
Lawrence Kanyuka is the political spokesperson for the M23 rebel group. He spoke with me from a place in DRC. A Washington public affairs firm is calling on the U.S. administration to pressure the government of Benin to release all political prisoners in the West African country. Gunstat Strategies Worldwide says the U.S. administration should consider using next week's U.S.-Africa Leaders Summit to investigate reports of a decline of democracy in Benin. Critics say the government appears to be using state institutions, including the police and the courts, to intimidate and harass opponents, pointing to the detention of opposition leaders, including Rakia Madugu. The critics express concern that the narrowing of political space could create an environment for autocracy. Supporters of the ruling party rejected their criticisms as alarmist. They urge authorities to arrest and prosecute those who threaten the country's peace and national cohesion. Jonathan Stemba is the president of Gunstat Strategies Worldwide. He tells me that democracy in Benin has taken a significant hit following reports of intimidation and harassment of opponents of the administration.
President Biden is preparing to host leaders for the U.S. Africa Leaders Summit next week. You know, I'd like to highlight who will be attending. You know, to invite an autocrat that has falsely imprisoned opposition candidates, you know, Talon has stifled and silenced legitimate political opposition. It's not good for the country, nor the region, nor the U.S. as they invite an autocrat to come and discuss trade, bilateral trade deals.
Jonathan, are you therefore saying that President Talon should not have been invited to participate in this U.S.-Africa Leadership Summit?
Yes, I agree wholeheartedly. I mean, the U.S. and its values are the core of this country. So I think we should put them to test and put Talon's feet to the fire and really find out the truth of what's happening in his country.
Supporters of the president are saying he was legitimately voted for and Rekia Madugu violated the law and that due process was taken to ensure that if he were to be found not guilty, she would have been released. But she had a case to answer, and that is why the law is dealing with her. And it has nothing to do with politics.
This is phony and entirely politically motivated. In fact, a judge that was part of the case that was ruling condemned the charges as being those, phony and entirely politically motivated. And since that judge has since exiled himself to France for fear of his life.
After the call, what's next? Because it appears the president will be here for the U.S.-Africa Leadership Summit.
Talon should be accountable. Instead, the U.S. administration is negotiating bilateral trade deals with the president that has destroyed, again, judicial system and aims to change Benin's constitution that so he can become a ruler for life. I think that's what's next. So he's going to get his favorable trade deal, change the constitution in his own country, and become a ruler for life, which to me, and I think my country, the U.S. government, would wholeheartedly agree that that is incorrect and wrong to do.
People are denying that democracy in Benin is retrogressing because there were people who challenged the president during election time. Opposition people were allowed to vote, contrary to reports that they were prevented from participating in the election, and that boycotting the election because you don't like one thing or the other does not necessarily undermine the credibility and authenticity of the elections. What's your reaction to that?
Well, I do know that the UN has come out with an opinion, and that opinion has been that the elections were not free and fair. Now, the narrative coming out of Benin is one thing, but I believe the UN as a body, a strong body that represents the world and its countries and its leadership, that's a very powerful opinion for them to say that this election was not free and fair.
The government is saying whoever breaks the law must answer, and that law and order must be maintained. Anybody who threatened the territorial integrity of the country must be dealt with. And that the government is mandated by the Constitution to uphold the rule of law. So if the rule of law falls on somebody who has broken the law, then why should they be disinvited from participating in a leadership summit, such as what is coming up here in Washington?
Well, if the rule of law is to present facts and witnesses, I don't believe that those were ever administered in the court. I do know that from what I've read, that there were no witnesses, and the respect of law, as we read daily, weekly, and monthly about what's happening in Benin, is very real. This is becoming a country that wants to change its constitution so Benin, Talon, can be ruler for life.
Jonathan Stemba is the president of Gangster Strategies Worldwide. He spoke with me from here in Washington. Nightline Africa comes to you on Saturdays and Sundays at 16 and 18 hours UTC from the English service of the Voice of America. And from the rest of the Nightline team, including producer Michael Harvey, we say a big thank you for joining us tonight. Up next is the podcast about the World Cup.
Sporty World Cup greetings to all of our Voice of America listeners and viewers. You are on goal with Sonny and Muckbill. We have Jackson Vogani in the studio with us as well. Jackson, talk to me about Croatia versus Brazil, my man.
First of all, it's an honor to finally make it to the studio. I was engaging with you guys on the other side of the Atlantic, and finally I'm here on the go with the Sonny and Muckbill.
You can such feel the energy,
I felt
right?
the energy from that far, and I can still feel it in here. Listen, such a heartbreaker for Brazil, man. You know, everybody wants to see the Samba Boys play in the finals. That, you know, the way they play their game, the artistry and everything. But, you know, this was Croatia's time, and, you know, they pulled it off. What a surprise.
You know, I thought the goalkeeper for Croatia, Dominic Livakovic, he was just outstanding, Muckbill.
Yeah, no, Sonny, I definitely agree. He's been great in so many other games, right? This was not his first rodeo when it came to PKs as well. Having done such a wonderful job against the Japanese, this young man really, really has an amazing future ahead. I believe he plays for a Croatian side at the moment. But best believe the big clubs will be calling.
Oh, yeah. His agent must be really happy right now. Yeah, absolutely.
You know, before that match, the Brazil-Croatia match, there was a lot of talk about the Brazilians and their goal celebrations, how they love to dance. But I thought that celebration by Petkovic after he equalized was a pretty good goal celebration.
It was a nice dance. It was very samba-like.
That's right, exactly. You know, see, samba-like dance.
I feel like that's what happens sometimes too, though, right? When you win, if you win with a little more grace, it kind of helps you moving forward. You know, having scored those four goals against South Korea,
right.
Them just kind of like, you know, almost, I wouldn't say gloating, but, you know, confidence is one thing, but you got to kind of move around that level. It's difficult.
I think they're enjoying the underdog status, you know, like the dark horse, you know, sort of. They don't want to over-celebrate and then, you know, create these expectations. They just want to low-key about it. You know, we want this. Let's go for the next one. Right. We don't want to create any expectations. People thinking that we are the big team that, you know, the big team to beat.
Right.
You know, so.
What about the penalty kick shootout, Muckbill? Croatia has now won all four penalty kick shootouts in a World Cup. They beat the Japanese on penalty kicks.
Yeah.
They beat the Brazilians on penalty kicks.
Yeah, honestly, I feel like when you go to penalty kicks, it becomes anybody's game. If you're the team that folks expected to win, because you got to understand, Brazil came into this World Cup ranked number one. Also, that's another bit of bad luck because no number one ranked FIFA team has won the World Cup ever. So I think Brazil was trying to get over that hump. But having come into this, I think a lot of folks knew if this game goes to PK, there's too much pressure on the Samba Boys. And they kind of unfortunately showed that having scored that goal by Neymar so late. What did they have? 7 minutes?
7 minutes.
Seven minutes to hold the fort down, but somehow the Croatians had one shot on goal. On goal. On goal.
Unbelievable.
And it went down.
Did not miss.
Oh my goodness. What an opportunity.
I think you make a great point. When it comes to penalties, it's anybody's game at that point. And you know, you've seen some of the greatest teams lose on penalties, just like the Brazilians. Right now, this is one of those games that is going to be in the annals of history. We remember how Brazil lost to Croatia in penalties.
Jackson, the most interesting thing about that is sometimes when you look at penalties, you kind of look at it and it looks like it might be 50-50 here and there. But then from the Moroccan side, we've seen goalkeeper Yassine Bounou, the way that he analyzes the kicker, it's almost as if he fakes you out a little bit, but at the same time looks at your foot. So there is so much about it that the goalie has to follow as well. And I felt like, unfortunately, Alisson, the Brazilian goalkeeper, wasn't really doing a lot to kind of, you know, put that fear in the Croatian players. He was kind of letting them set the pace for what was going on. The first two, I believe, went straight down the middle. And after that is all she wrote.
Got to give a shout out for Neymar.
Yes.
He put the Brazilians ahead 1-0 in extra time. And that goalie scored the 77th of his national team career. He's now tied with the legendary Pelé.
Oh, wow.
And Jackson, Pelé Still hospitalized in Sao Paulo.
I saw a tweet a while ago where he's saying that he's watching from his, you know, from the bed.
What do you think in terms of, like, Neymar down the road lifting the World Cup trophy like Pele did?
Neymar still has some years ahead of him. He's still a young guy. I think he'd probably play again in the World Cup. He's getting progressively better. He's one of those players that I remember watching him break his leg in which was the Brazil World Cup in Brazil.
I think it was.
I thought that was the end of his career, but he has been able to jump back in the last couple of years. He's been progressively getting better. So, you know, I think Pele has right now watching and saying that, you know, I have some young men that are behind me that are coming, that are following in my footsteps, and he's happy about the progression of people like Pele, of people like Neymar.
And we certainly wish Pele well.
Yes, absolutely.
And hope he, is back home again soon.
Absolutely. Gentlemen, we have on the line with us, straight from Doha, Qatar, we have Kali Abdu and Sunday Shomari. Gentlemen, talk to me about the atmosphere after that Brazil loss.
Hey, I'm telling you, I mean, the location I was, during the truth, McBeal, was like putting cold water.
Man.
He's right. The atmosphere just was a lot of Brazilian fans. Yeah. Every touch. Brazil only had to touch the ball, and you would hear screams, and you would turn and think it was a goal. So, you know, it was like he said, those people they got quiet pretty fast after the final whistle.
Kali, Sonny here in Studio 2. Were you surprised when Petkovic equalized for the Croatians? Because I certainly felt that the Brazilians were headed to victory after Neymar's goal. What was your reaction?
Well, you know, to tell you the truth, I wasn't surprised that he scored. I was surprised that he scored then, but I was telling him that Croatia have a goal in them and it would be really difficult. I told him that Croatia may drag them into extra time, but I just didn't see them scoring in extra time like that. When Brazil, like you guys were saying earlier, had the game pretty much in the bag, you know. It was surprising, to say the least.
Absolutely, absolutely. Gentlemen, talk to us about the Moroccans, man. Morocco is lifting up the flag for Africa at the moment. What do you think their chances are against this Portuguese team who has shown us that they've really came out gunning the last game?
Well, to me, I don't know about you, but to me, I think it's the same thing. What did we think about Brazil after scoring 4 goals in the first half and done deal? And this morning, they were saying they will finish the game early. They said, get in, get a win, get a goal, and just relax. You know, like get in, get paid, and get out. They were like, this is the game plan. But guess what? Things changed. And I was telling Kali, now the game changed. They couldn't get that goal early as they wanted to. Things are changing. So frustration is building up. You're going to the second half. You're going to the final minutes. You're going to the extra time. Done. Plan B, plan C, plan D didn't work out.
No, they had one plan, plan A, to win.
Well, Sunday and Kali, we were talking about the Croatian goalkeeper and how big he was against the Brazilians. And Mukbil earlier mentioned Banu, the Moroccan goalkeeper. You know, one guy like that, if he's on fire and he's stopping shots, anything's possible. How important has he been to the Moroccan team's success in Qatar?
Yeah, he's been very, very instrumental, that's for sure. But let me go back to your point. I think Morocco will need to have the game of their lives against Portugal because, make no mistake, Brazil had all their work cut out for them against Croatia. It'll be a different game. I'll tell you why. Because tactically, Croatia, I think they've been very pragmatic throughout the tournament. If you watch them, they've switched tactics throughout the tournament. It's like different tactics for different teams. And I don't think Brazil expected them to have that kind of... They play like some kind of mid-block and just control the ball in the middle of the park all night long. Brazil didn't expect that, I don't think. I think that would be a different game because Morocco might play a lower block and just try to hold the fort. And like you say, Bono will be busy. He would need to have a beautiful day if they progress. So it may be a different game where you may see Portugal just hammering all night long and Morocco looking for a chance to catch them on a break. It won't be the same as the game we watched tonight where Croatia pretty much just kept controlling the ball in the middle of the park. So they would really need to be on their toes all night because, mm-hmm. as you know, the striker, the kid, Ramos,
yeah.
yep. he's no joke. You know?
Yeah. The hat-trick hero.
Yeah.
He can score from anywhere, through anything. So they would really need to be on there. Bono would need to be on his A game.
Guys, now that the Samba Boys are out, we know the pageantry that surrounds the Samba Boys, the colors, the celebrations. Do you expect the noise in the stadiums to quiet down?
Oh, no. Well, I'll tell you, it depends what happened with Argentina tonight.
Yeah.
Because there are so many Argentinian fans in here, too. At the same time, if you remember the other day, when Brazil won, you go to Super Kiev, they're singing Brazil, and these guys are coming up singing. I'm like, wait a minute, who won here, Brazil or Argentina?
So you may find that the Brazilian fans are sticking around to rub one in, depending on how the Argentina game goes.
Yeah, it depends on this Argentina game for sure.
Right.
Well, speaking of the fans, I know the Moroccan fans have had great support there in Qatar. In their last match against Spain, it seemed like at least half the stadium was Moroccan fans. What role do you think they'll have, gentlemen, in this match upcoming against Portugal?
I think Morocco will have time of their life.
Yeah.
They have a lot of support. We were talking to all these Moroccans in this city. You have Moroccans who live here, number one. You have Moroccans who travel from Saudi Arabia, from the USA where you guys are, from Africa, from all over, coming to support. And not only that, it's an army of Moroccans, but also they have support of Algeria, Tunisia, and all those African countries. In the northern, everybody's like, you know what? We are supporting Morocco.
The entire Arab world is behind them.
Yes. So,
Saudis, people from Oman, everybody who supports the Arab world supports Morocco. On top of that, you have every African support. So they are the home team right now.
Oh, yeah.
Absolutely. Gentlemen, I want to ask one more question. As it pertains to the Brazilians and the Samba Boys being out, what are your thoughts on the rest of the teams being in and almost kind of taking a deep breath and saying, man, we didn't want to go through these guys. Having Croatia knock them out is something we're really happy about. What do you think about the rest of the teams that are in the tournament still and how they feel about the Samba Boys being out?
I think Argentina is very happy. What do you think?
Yeah, for sure.
We're talking about sure. that.
But there was a time where we were here and we talked to some fans from Argentina.
Mm-hmm.
I remember asking them if they wanted to meet Brazil in the final, and they said no. They would prefer to meet them in the semifinals, mm-hmm. so only one of them goes through. Mm-hmm. So that was a very interesting thing for me. Yeah. I think that they may have wanted to meet each other in semifinal. There's some kind of grudge thing going on there. But to answer your question, I'm very interested to see what happens tomorrow between France and England. It's a huge game as well. The English have been very confident throughout the tournament, but then now you see they're a little, you know, apprehensive, scared of what Mbappe might do. So that's an interesting one coming up for sure.
I'm sure most of these teams are breathing a sigh of relief after Brazil leaving.
Absolutely.
Oh, yeah.
But they have to go through Mbappe.
Yeah.
Or Harry Kane and those other, you know, it doesn't get any easier, but for sure it's easier that Brazil aren't going to factor in for sure.
Kali Abdu and Sunday Shamari joining us from Doha, Qatar. Thank you, gentlemen. We'll be right back on Goal with Sonny and Muckbill and Jackson after this break.
It is the biggest sports event of the year, the 2022 World Cup in Qatar. Join VOA to celebrate Africa's king sport. in-depth coverage, breakout stars, Cinderella teams, coaches, players, and let's not forget the fans from the four corners of the continent and from the city of Doha. Don't miss the fun with Team VOA Africa. Let's experience the magic of football together.
Together, you're on goal with Sonny and Mukbil and Jackson Vunganyi joining us here in Studio 2. Jackson, I know you were in Ghana recently, gauging reaction to the Black Stars. Maybe off the pitch, what was maybe your big moment on your first trip to Ghana?
Listen, I had many big moments. First of all, I was there to capture the energy and the vibe in the city, and they did not fail me. There's so much love for the Black Stars. You know, if your team is playing at the World Cup, believe me, you're paying attention, whether you're a soccer fan or not. And the other thing was the jerseys. I feel like, and it's my opinion, but I think the Black Stars have the best jerseys.
They got a great jersey.
Yes, and the whole city was wearing jerseys. So everywhere you go, everybody was wearing, like they had different variations. Mm-hmm. Beautiful, beautiful. So it was so nice to see that energy and the color in the city. Of course, there was disappointment after they lost their first match, which they thought they could have easily won. Then, you know, they were able to beat South Korea. I was watching at this fan park that was set up by Ghana Broadcasting Corporation, their sports channel, GTV Plus. Okay. Shout out to you guys for hosting me. And there was like hundreds of people just watching there, drumming, beating drums. It was fun. Even during the time when they would lose, people would not stop dancing and drumming. It was just energy to the 100 all the way through. It was beautiful. I enjoyed my time there. I think, you know, I would love to go back 4 years. I'm sure the Black Stars again will represent. It was a little anticlimactic the way they lost in that match, especially that they build up to that, you know, the tension building up to the Uruguay match. Everybody was like, this is our moment. Right. We are avenging. We are revenging. We talked about this when I was there before the match. And, you know, it kind of fizzled out. The moment just came and went by. Yeah. And I felt like, you know, like everybody felt like they didn't, there was not, at least one goal would have been enough to, you know. I think the only redeeming aspect of that game was the fact that also Uruguay is not moving on. So that was the only thing they were able to hold on to. But overall, I had a time of my life.
I enjoyed it. Once a team is eliminated at the World Cup, I realize the same thing with the USA. Yeah. Once they lose and Ghana loses, you don't think about them anymore. No. Well, who's left? Who's left in this tournament?
And here's to that point, right? We had 32 teams in this World Cup. And as you know, for the next World Cup, they're planning on expanding, right? Mm-hmm.
48 teams.
So just think about this, right? For it to be 32 teams, and we saw the hustle and bustle of the first beginning of the tournament, because the tournament was only about a month long, right? Mm-hmm. And we've seen so many games back to back to back to back, mm-hmm. where we're just finally starting to cool off a little bit, having a couple of days in between or whatever. But knowing that 48 teams are going to be playing in this tournament, what are your thoughts on that? Is it the Hunger Games?
Yeah.
Yeah, if they stick with four teams to each group, and I think they will, you're going to add a few more groups.
A few more groups, yeah.
Right.
And, yeah, that's a lot of matches.
Yeah.
A lot of matches. Yeah. I think, if my calculations are correct, Africa at the next World Cup will have at least 9 teams.
There we go.
9 teams.
Right.
There we go.
Right now they have 5.
Yes.
Right. So almost double. Okay. And then there's a possibility of another African team. If they win some type of inter-confederation playoff.
Oh, right.
So, yeah, I mean, Africa could double its representation.
With 54 countries, you'd think we'd have a little more representation on the continent.
Listen, there are countries that have a billion people that don't have a team at the World Cup. So.
This is valid. Hey, I'm here advocating. More African teams.
More African teams in the World Cup. Listen, the energy. If they expand it, and how many groups is it right now? Up to
eight groups. I think it's eight.
If they expand that, that, more African countries in there, more African investment into soccer, mm-hmm. it's going to be beautiful. Yeah. It's going to be a time of our lives. Yeah. I remember looking forward to the World Cup when I was a kid. I didn't get that energy this time around. Right. And I feel like when we have more African countries in the World Cup,
And that's a great point too. Like me growing up, I loved the World Cup too, but I was supporting the Samba Boys.
Yeah,
like Somalia wasn't in the World Cup, so
and that's a good point, Mukbil, because I think we're gonna see more teams making their debut at the World Cup.
Absolutely, I think it's gonna be great for the spreading of the game, right? Of spreading of the wealth. There we go. That's a great point, because at the end of the day, we've seen so many different teams make it to the World Cup, but unfortunately, when it comes to the top and the pinnacle, it's been but a few handful of teams. And this tournament, tournament is showing us something slightly different with the underdogs coming in and really knocking down some of these big boys that just thought that this was a gimme game.
The legacy teams,
right?
Yeah.
You know, I was thinking when I mentioned the wealth of the game and how it is spread around. A player we talked about when you were in Ghana, Mohamed Kudus.
Yes.
I think he has raised his financial stockpile quite a bit based on his performance.
I'm quite sure there are many teams in Europe right now that are trying to write checks for him. His agent is busy on the calls.
Right.
Okay. So there are many players like Kudus that have made an impact during this World Cup.
What better stage?
Absolutely.
I mean,
biggest platform. Biggest platform, and if you do your best and you shine and the news media is on you and you know you're doing things that are not expected, I'm telling you, your bank is going to look good. You're going to be happy.
Any other African players, Mukbil, that you think have really done well in terms of maybe moving to a bigger club?
Abdelhamid Sabiri from the Moroccan side definitely would love to get on a bigger team. He plays for Serie A, but at the moment it's not one of the bigger clubs. So I'm sure people are keeping their eyes on him as well. He was the first penalty taker in that Spain Spain-Morocco penalty shootout. Man, ice cold veins to go first, you know, going first. Man, that's scary. That's not fun at all. I tell people all the time, like, that first player that goes through, usually it has to be one of your premier penalty takers because
if you miss,
he's setting the pace.
He's setting the tone. Yes.
Right. Yeah. So a lot of pressure for him, but, you know, he nailed it. And hopefully he gets, you know, some more dollar signs, you know, some cha-ching, right?
Yeah.
But let's talk about quickly go over some of these the top goal scorers that are potentially on the golden boot list, right? If I'm just going down, I got Kylian Mbappe, 5 goals. He's kind of leading the troops. And then you have,
I mean, if I can interrupt, I would think if France can hold on to the trophy this time around, Mbappe is probably going to be the golden ball winner as most valuable player.
Looks that way, but you do have Olivier Giroud, who also has 3 goals as well. He overtook Thierry Henry as the most prolific goal scorer in France history a couple games back, and he has 3 goals. So you never know. He's been playing. He's been doing his thing.
True.
Then you have young man we spoke about, 21 years old, Gonçalo Ramos, right, for Portugal. 21 years old.
Yeah. What a debut. Yeah. I mean, he comes out with a hat trick.
You know, the whole situation with Cristiano Ronaldo and, you know, being subbed out for him potentially, you know, coach puts him in and says, It's your time, young fella.
It's your time
and
to shine.
Come on now. How better than a hat trick?
Absolutely.
Come on,
absolutely,
man. So,
Mukbil, I want to give a quick shout out for another young player, Bukayo Saka for England.
Oh, yeah?
21 years old.
Saka's a personal favorite of mine. He, you know, I support the club team, Arsenal. So, you know, that's my guy. So we knew Saka. We know what this young man can do, you know, for a while. So seeing him do this on the World Cup stage is just, it's really amazing. And he's also another one of them that's in the race for that golden boot with 3 goals, right? It just depends on what happens in this French matchup. Right. If he gets a goal or two, he's right in there. Man.
But I think this belongs to Kylian Mbappe, honestly. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I don't see anybody taking it from him.
It's amazing what he's done at such a young age in two World Cups. Right. Two. He had four. He had four in Russia.
Right. Seeing him especially that young is when we really were truly introduced to him, right?
So the problem, he was 17 years old, right?
I think at the time he was 19 in that World Cup. So he's 23 now.
Yeah.
But still, I think he may have actually been 18 because his birthday's later on in the year. It's in December. It was a Summer World Cup. But nonetheless, first time seeing him and him really showing us that he really has everything you need from a guy in that position, getting it done, and then doing it on a follow-up.
Exactly.
Come on, man. That's the thing.
Absolutely.
We've seen one World Cup wonders, you know what I mean? Some guys who've come in and balled out. Next World Cup, not so much.
And let's not forget, the French came here without Benzema.
Oh my God. What would have been the French team with Benzema?
But Benzema, not only Benzema. Benzema, of course, Ballon d'Or, you know, he's in top form. But Pogba injury as well, right?
Yes.
So they have some key players that are big guys that are out.
Yeah.
But still,
it's showing
you the quality of that team and the depth of that team to be able to still say, look, we're missing out
on our B team can still beat you.
Come on, man.
Well, let's put you on the spot, Mukbul. Who do you like in that England-France quarterfinal?
Ooh, that's a tough one. Saka, like I said, is my guy. Saka's my guy, but I will say this. The way that the French have been playing, especially another shout-out, even though he hasn't been scoring goals, Dembele has been playing so phenomenal. Like, he is literally the workhorse for that team to create these goal opportunities for Kylian Mbappe. So for me, it's like if the way him and Mbappe have been playing off of each other – it's difficult to say, you know, I don't know who on the back end is going to stop that pace, because Dembele is no slowpoke either. He's got some pace too. So you try to stop him, Mbappe's over here, he's got you on the pace. What are you going to do? It's going to be tough.
Another prediction time.
Yes.
Jackson, I'm going Morocco-Portugal. Morocco-Portugal.
I'm going to give it to Morocco.
All right, I'm with you. 100%. I'm with you, Jackson.
up until this point, I think it's on goal. Nobody has called against Morocco. Okay, I don't expect it to start, you know, soon. So I'm thinking they have this in the bag.
I think
I'm very confident.
There has to be a breakthrough in terms of an African team making it to that next level.
The next level, yeah.
And I think the Atlas Lions can do it.
Man, honestly speaking, I feel like the Atlas Lions, I'm rooting for the Atlas Lions to go through. I love the fact that Croatia was able to beat the Samba Boys. It's anybody's game, and that's the thing. France versus England, even though I like the French to win, England's got so many stars, so you never know. You never know. That's the beauty of this game, though. That's the beauty of this game.
I'm with France on that one, though.
Yeah, no.
I feel like France got this.
I think they do as well. I think they do as well, but I still definitely think that you can't knock them out. You can't think that England is just going to be a pushover because they've shown us
they
have a lot of weapons, and all it takes is just one shot, as we've seen with Croatia. Mm-hmm. One shot.
Before the tournament kicked off, I remember Infantino, the FIFA president, saying, focus on the football, not on the politics and all the
politics
problems.
Is part of the...
Do you think the quality of the football has kind of pushed some of the negative things aside?
That's a great point, Sonny. You're right. Actually, this year we have seen some of most amazing soccer at the World Cup stage, and it has quieted down some of the politics, some of the noise, you know, things like, oh, we cannot drink alcohol here, or, you know, human rights and things of that nature.
Right.
So I think the game has actually really added,
Jackson,
you know, elevated.
I love it. We could go on for days. You know how it is. But we are on goal with Sonny Mukbul. And Jackson.
And Jackson.
Man, it's been a wonderful one. We'll be back on our next episode.